When J.R. Richard was scheduled to pitch, batters sometimes came up with suddenly sore arms, headaches, or flu-like symptoms. At the peak of his career in the late 70s, when the 6'8 right-hander was striking out more than 300 batters a season with a fastball that exceeded 100 miles an hour, the Houston Astros pitcher was among the most intimidating figures in baseball. That chapter in his life ended suddenly in the summer of 1980, when Richard was felled by a stroke. In a recent book titled Still Throwing Heat, Richard reviews his career and discusses the life he has built beyond the success he enjoyed and the difficulties he has endured. J.R. Richard, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
In your first start with Houston in 1971, you beat the Giants, and in doing so, I understand you made quite an impression on the man I consider the greatest player ever, Willie Mays. Tell us about that.
Well, matter of fact, when I was totally surprised that I got a chance to pitch that day because I had just come up at the end of the year with the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really think about Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, or Bobby Bonds, or any of those guys, superstars, being in the lineup. My thing was just to become the best that I could be and do the best job that I could do. And he told the first baseman the reason I didn't strike him out four times because he took himself out of the game.
But you did strike him out three times.
He had rather struck out three times than be dead once.
In 1980, mid-season, you collapsed during a workout. Please tell me about what happened.
Well, as far as back as I can remember, I felt a lot of high-pitched tone ringing in my left ear, which I didn't think nothing about it at that time. I kind of just shook it off and kept on throwing a few more. Then I threw a couple of more, then I become real nauseated, and I lay down on the Astrodome floor. And the next thing I remember, I was waking up in the hospital. I had been complaining to the Astros for almost a month or two about something was wrong. And if I'm such a valuable asset to the ball club, why wasn't I immediately rushed to the doctors from Chicago when it first started?
Mm-hmm.
Again, if I was such a valuable asset to the company.
During an interview in 1984, 4 years after your major league career ended, you said, "I call what happened to me the big trade. I traded baseball for the life of God." But 10 years later, after losing $1 million and a home in a business scam and two divorce settlements, you were homeless and sleeping under a bridge. What happened?
That was the only way he could really get my attention, is to get me away from everybody and everything so he can sit down and talk to me one-on-one. God did not make me to become homeless. He cared more about me than being homeless, and I know I was better than that.
I'm curious about the time that you were homeless. You're 6'8" tall. You were a star in Houston, no doubt about that, a very recognizable figure. Did people who were in that homeless community of sorts know who you were?
Some did, some didn't. People see you. First of all, they can't believe it. And they don't really want to bother you. They probably look at you and say, okay, he don't look like he's the happy camper. So I looked like I wasn't a man to be messed with at that time.
Your homelessness stretched from late 1994 into 1995, but you got some help from Houston's Now Testament Church. You found a job with an asphalt company and then returned to the church as a minister. But you say in the book that even with the outside help, you helped yourself. How so?
Well, I changed my thinking, which changed my attitude. I'm not going to do the same old things and act the same old way because God is right here. So, and I just simply changed my thinking and didn't accept the negativity.
Did any of your ex-teammates or maybe some of the guys against whom you played in the big leagues help you out at that point?
No, they did not. Not a one. Not even ball club at that time.
When you look back at your baseball career now, and I know you must have in order to go through what you went through to write this book, are you bitter?
Not at all. Never have been bitter. It's always been the other way around. See, when people don't understand who you are, when people can't control you, they have a tendency to want to destroy you. But see, you got to realize this. Sports is a business. Nothing more or nothing less.
You occasionally speak at various churches and at baseball camps, and now you're promoting a book. How have those activities kept you busy?
Well, I'm sitting here talking to you right now these days, and everything is real well, and I'm staying close to the ministry right now because my main concern right now is God.
You also have helped Houston's homeless through your ministry, right?
Yes, I have. What I'm trying to do is change their mind. They got to have a different mindset. See, a man could eat a whole whale, but it takes one bite at a time. Or he can walk a mile, but it takes one step at a time. So if you're willing to take that step, he will make a way out of no way. See, God is the only one I know can take a mess, go in a mess, clean up a mess, and come back out and don't be messy. Now you figure that out.
With the assistance of Lou Friedman, J.R. Richard has written Still Throwing Heat, and he joined me from KUHF in Houston. J.R., thank you very much for speaking with me, and I wish you the best going forward.
Thank you, sir. It's been my pleasure.